Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for MacBreak Weekly, episode 52 for August the 8th, 2007, 10 cents a dance.
MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak.
Welcome to MacBreak Weekly, episode 52. No, Leo Laporte has not changed his voice, just his face. This is Scott.
Sounds so much better.
And I am at the helm today because Leo is somewhere in a foreign country in a hotel. Hello, Leo.
I'm in Vancouver.
That is in a foreign country.
It's as they say on the Studio 60, Vancouver's not in Canada. Vancouver's not anywhere. It's just Vancouver.
We're excited today. We're going to talk about the recent Apple press announcement. And to help us do that, of course, we couldn't go on without our friend from Boston, Mr. Andy Anatko. How are you doing, Andy?
I am doing moderately neato, even though I'm marinating slightly in this 90-degree temperatures.
But at least we know you're not this fake Steve Jobs.
I am the fake Steve Jobs, which means I am the real Steve Jobs. You must all now bow down before me.
Also chipping in on this conversation, he's a Merlin and a man. He's Merlin Man from 43 Folders.
Hello, Scott Bourne. How are you?
I'm excellent, sir. And last but certainly not least, fresh off an airplane from somewhere, which is pretty much the way you can find Alex Lindsay any day, is Alex Lindsay from Pixel Core. Hi.
Hello.
So we have
like fresh off an airplane. It seems like an oxymoron somehow.
Yeah, that's true. You know, they say
it wasn't JetBlue.
Yeah, they say to you, you want to get on the plane, and I usually say I'd rather get in.
Oh, I bet they laugh uproariously at that.
Oh, Mr. Bone, you're so funny.
You're so funny, Mr. Bone.
Thank you. Well, you know, yesterday I had the privilege, since Leo couldn't make it, of sitting in at 4 Infinite Loop on the Steve Jobs press conference announcing all the new cool stuff. And guys, I got to tell you, it was a really weird event because, first of all, it was only about 200 people. And it, you know, it wasn't as big as a keynote. We got to be a lot closer, a lot more intimate setting. And it was kind of bizarre because, you know, Steve's timing was off just a little bit because there were only 4 or 5 applause breaks.
I watched the video, and there's a very high quality video on Apple's page, and he seemed very low key. I guess it was because it was a smaller group. It was very conversational almost.
And he even asked us to give him questions from the audience. And
unheard of. Yeah. I can't remember them ever doing that before.
I knocked 3 people out who had their hands up near me, and they still didn't call my name.
Oh, man. So they knew.
What would you have asked?
Well, it turns out my question would have been pretty you know, ineffectual. So it's a good thing I didn't. I was going to ask how the iPhone update would work, given the fact that he was showing new iPhone functionality. Little did I know that they snuck it in over Edge, we think. It was there all along waiting to be awoken once they announced the new features in .Mac.
You're talking about the publish to web button on the camera.
Yeah, yeah. It just mysteriously shows up. I was thinking there was going to have to be some sort of firmware update, and I was going to ask when and how that was going to work. They didn't call on me, and now I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, it showed up on my mind pretty quickly. And what was great, I was up in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden I got a message from my Mac saying, we'd like to shut your iDisk down for a moment while we make some changes. And then it came back 10 gigabytes. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was one of the big announcements, was that they've increased the storage capacity on .Mac. Steve claims, I think, about 1.8 million subscribers now. And they kept the price the same, and they added some functionality in terms of the web gallery.
It seems only fair. I mean, 10 gigabytes, nowadays, that's not even enough.
Yeah, where is .Mac now on the credibility meter, do you think? It used to be like way, way, way in the red, where you're thinking, gee, I can get 1 gig for free from box.net, I can get a free Gmail account, I can get a free this,
right,
and free that.
Right.
Now that you get 10 gigabytes, now that you add that on top of the ease with which you can publish from your iLife apps, and now that you add on top of that wonderful iSync feature that you always had, is the needle sort of twitching into the yellow now, you think? I think now if you can get it at a good discount, if you can get one of those $69 bundles or one of the $69 deals, it's actually kind of an okay deal now.
I do too. I think for the garden variety, especially new Mac user, it's a lot more credible. And I went back after a long time away and looked at the backup app. And I got to say that that's an app that's come a long way. Backup.
Yeah.
Backup by itself is not tremendously useful because you can't back up to FTP or web your own web dev. It only works with theirs. And to me, that's pointless. If I've got a gig of space, I'm not going to blow that on stuff. But I think that combination of having more iDisk space and being able to use it for with backup.app, I think that makes it a lot more palatable, especially
yeah, I wish there were more backup apps that worked as simply as backup. Just simply say, I want you to take all my iTunes purchases and everything in my documents folder and make sure it's always backed up. Even the really, really good, simple backup apps like SuperDuper, I think they're great at a whole disk solution, but they're not good at the sort of bite-sized backups that most people are interested in.
Yeah, and stuff like Chronosync is a little fiddly for somebody who's not really in the mood to sit there and figure out, oh, do I want this to change by size or by, you know, all that stuff.
I don't know. 10 gigs is, I mean, I couldn't even back up just my iTunes purchases in 10 gigs. So
but you could do your preferences. You could get your a lot of your application library, that well, stuff no, that.
Also, the other thing I don't like about it is it backs it up as a ball, right? And I kind of like my backups to be to look like the folders I backed up so I can at least see that it's there and maybe even open individual files. So I actually use the iDisk as a backup, and you know, I use the local iDisk, copy files that I want to be available on all my Macs to that. I find that useful.
I do too.
Well, actually, I mean, I did get info on my documents folder, and my documents folder has been is my legacy all the way from Lilith. I'm on Lilith number 7 right now, shortly to transition to Lilith number 8. The documents folder is my transition from my very first copy of Mac OS 10. I just drag it from the old machine to the new machine. And so this contains just about everything I've written over the past 5 or 6 years, and it still amounts to less than 5 or 6 gigabytes.
But
so
you're not putting music in there. You're not putting photos in there.
Well, because it's called documents, Leo. It's
I have a trick for this.
Just your documents folder.
Right,
I get
exactly.
I was having a terrible time running into that, so I finally created another folder at the top level of my home directory called documents, large, and that's where I put
grade A brown, just like eggs.
Is it roan or is it brown? That's where I put my downloads folder. So I put my downloads folder there, and I create an alias to a junk drawer that I leave on the desktop. So that for me, when I go and do get size or OmniSweep, that's where I see all that the space, all those DMGs really pile up. Anyway,
For some reason, I have 23 gigs in my documents folder, but I think part of it is keynote presentations because I store all the media in those, and those could get pretty big.
Well, audio assets too. I mean, anytime you're like doing, if you're putting podcasts together, you're probably doing it in documents, right?
Right, and I actually see a couple of gigabytes worth of old movies. I don't even know what these are.
Alex, we haven't heard from you. What say you about the new .Mac?
I think it's actually pretty good. I mean, I've never really had that big of a complaint about .Mac as it was. I mean, I use it all the time, and it was fine. I mean, I like the convenience of being able to just pop stuff up there. And I think that especially when you see some of the stuff that they're doing with the web, where they're doing a little bit of a Flickr thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the Mac Insider Flickr kind of solution where you can build a page and then have your friends be able to upload to that page from their iPhone. I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, I tell people not to use iWeb because it's such a one-way solution. I mean,
I don't think that's iWeb. I think that's fired out from iPhoto. These are the galleries. These are the photo galleries that are there.
Yeah, but again, wouldn't you want to use Flickr where there's a community as opposed to .Mac where it's just kind of...
The web galleries are independent of iWeb, but
I understand. Yeah.
And I do think they're very slick. They're far nicer in terms of their rich media capabilities than anything you'll find at Flickr. But I agree that most people are going to look at this that are on the fence and say, well, yeah, big deal. One button publishing with my photos to the web. I've already got that with Flickr. I think if you're a guy that already uses it or a gal that already uses it, you're happy about it. I don't know that this pushes anybody to the edge. It's really interesting. Steve didn't spend hardly any time at all talking about the 10 gig upgrade. He spent all his time showing off the photo stuff.
Right.
And I have to say that I have a Flickr account and I kind of use it, but it's much easier for me to just sit there in iPhoto. Well, for me, it would be better in Aperture, but in iPhoto, just to be able to just throw stuff up there, I'd be much more likely to do that. And I have to admit that most of my friends, would be able to very easily use the web stuff with their iPhone, because I think that the number of people I know that don't have one is dwindling quickly.
That's probably what I'll do with my iPhone, because you can't really get it. There's no one button upload to Flickr with the iPhone. So
what am I doing wrong that I can't make mine work? Oh, by the way, I bought an iPhone, or I was given an iPhone.
What?
Wait. Upload to Web Gallery is not.
Showed a little. Went down the dock. Showed a little leg. Limo pulled up with a Trump look on the side.
Jeez Louise, who gave you an iPhone, dude?
Oh, let's not get into that. For some businessmen in town, and I did them a couple favors. All right,
lonely businessmen.
I can't get the upload to Web Gallery to work.
Okay. Well, see, here's the thing: it doesn't work.
Oh,
it's not hooked up to anything.
Problem solved.
Yeah, that would be the thing that Steve forgot to mention during the press conference, is that for most people, there are a few people contacted me, said they got it to work, but for whatever reason, most people can't get it to work. Now, Chris Breen has figured out a workaround that involves simply creating a contact called Web Gallery and then emailing the photo.
No, that's not the answer, though.
Obviously not. It's a kludge, but Apple needs to fix it. There are a bunch of hoops you do have to jump through, Merlin, to enable it. You have to look very carefully. There's a thing on the right side, top of the screen, that talks about, you know, the email address you have to assign to it, and then you have to enable it to do this and that. I think they've implemented it poorly, and you know, it's a cool idea. I think we got a long ways to go. It's sort of like backup 1.0 versus where we're at today.
Yeah, I'll tell you, boy, that if you could, I realize that this part of this whole whatever thing, but boy, to make that a one click for Flickr would really be pretty sweet.
Well, that's what shows you, and that's why I'm not having third party applications. That's probably what you're going to say, and it really is a drawback.
Yeah, but I really think that that's a more of a drawback. It shows the limitations of iPhoto than Flickr or anything else. I've always said, and I hope I haven't gotten my copy of iPhoto yet. It's arriving tomorrow morning. But I've always said that it's the perfect picture of what digital photography was like in 1998, 1999, where you had to have dedicated buttons that will send your pictures to a photo site that's controlled by the same company that created the software, because there weren't all that many options back in the late 90s. Today, the best photo software, the library software, will simply ask you, where do you like to keep your photos? Where do you like to publish your photos? And we'll just forge that conduit. I'm really, really happy with simply doing an export and then uploading to Flickr manually or through an iPhoto plugin, because I just don't like the way that .Mac posts and lets me manage my photos online.
I do have to say
that wish there was that kind of intimacy.
It's a great thing for an iPhone to have one-click upload from a camera.
That's a differentiator, to tell you the truth.
Well, but again, you could do that on almost any other camera phone using something like Shosu. I get one click to Flickr.
Yeah,
but since they won't put that on an iPhone, I want at least to get the web. I'm going to try working it right now.
I had Shosu working on my Windows mobile phones, two different Windows mobile phones, and at some point it just stopped working, and I couldn't get it working again. I was back to attaching them as emails.
So it's a little buggy.
I have no use for a phone application that doesn't simply work. If a mail attachment always works, that's what I'm going to use first from start to finish.
There's another drawback. Mail attachments with the iPhone is they're 300x300. They're low quality, so.
Well, they're not that bad. They're VGA, but still, yeah.
Let's try to get back in sequence, guys. Let's start at the beginning of the press conference where he started talking about the iMac.
I thought it was amazing how quickly he went through the iMac.
Even before that, he pointed out how great Mac sales have been and the growth of Mac sales compared to PC sales. You got to say, that's very good news.
Yeah, that does. You know, we've covered this on the show before, fears that maybe they were going to abandon the computer business. Those numbers don't get me thinking they're going to abandon the computer business.
Yeah, 30% growth consistently quarter after quarter after quarter is pretty impressive. It means that halo effect from the iPod, and I guess now the iPhone, is pretty powerful.
Yeah. He didn't spend a lot of time. The best thing, did you guys see the picture of the Dell computer with all the wires?
Yeah.
That was...
once again, not fair, but okay.
Yeah. But do you think there's any chance that was just a random pick? I think they were remembering the time the CEO of Dell in 97 said that Apple is going to be dead soon. Anyone who's smart would buy it and then break it up. Yeah. Ha ha, ho ho.
And by the way, Apple's value has now exceeded Dell's value. Just last week, I think. Maybe it's gone down again since the stock's not performing very well. But
Well, there were a couple of interesting things. The press reaction in the room was one of, you know, I have to admit, kind of giddy excitement. And there were mainstream press there. So people were pretty excited. They went through all the bells and whistles. They kept two of them underneath a black tarp for quite some time. Then, you know, like, we wouldn't realize that's what was there.
And he went sure over, looked like an iMac under there.
Yeah. He went over and undid it. And then, of course, he started doing the demo. Yeah. The cool thing is after the press conference, they had a special room in the back where they had a bunch of them set up, and they let us go back and actually play with them.
What do you think?
I ordered one.
I did too.
Weren't you forsworn from buying a computer for a while?
Nope. I was forsworn from buying a laptop.
Lawyer ball.
That's quibbling, because the iMac is essentially a laptop with a keyboard broken off the bottom of it. Okay. Have you looked at this thing?
Yeah, quibbling I'll take, but I ordered the 24-inch top-of-the-line 1-gig
A laptop with a 24-inch screen and an Intel Core 2 Extreme processor.
Yeah, but I think that Apple should sort of drop all the pretense that the iMac is a desktop computer.
Well, wait a minute.
You go down the hardware store, buy a tube of epoxy and a piano hinge, glue that notebook PC keyboard to the bottom of it. You, sir, and with a couple of car batteries to power it for 20 minutes, you, sir, have a laptop computer.
I think, actually, this is the beginning.
For, like, Louis Anderson's lap. But
it's moving away from, for instance, 7,200 RPM drives. I'm sure they're laptop drives, or maybe not, though, if you're getting a terabyte in there. They're starting to, that's a computer speed. You're talking the video card, while not the best video card in the world, is better than most laptop video cards. I think this is...
I'm not saying it's laptop performance, because obviously the advantage of having this build factor is that you have enough room to have real drives and real processors and real co-processors.
I'm concerned
about that. But I do think they're giving away. So there's certain creature comforts that you have with a desktop. I don't get that keyboard at all. I absolutely don't get it.
People seem to want it.
I'll tell you what, I typed on it, and when you type on it, you get it.
It's very thin. I mean, it's very beautiful.
I'm going to have three keyboards standing by my desktop waiting to do side-by-side tests. I will be so shocked if it is as comfortable as any of those three other keyboards.
Andy, I'm willing to hate it.
You like the leaf spring switches that make all that clatter when you type, right?
Not necessarily. I like those because a passersby will actually think that I'm working, and I always like to create that illusion. But really, I like full... I think that it's okay to have big... purposeful buttons on the sides of the keyboard. I like having a wrist rest. More than that, I like having big keys that really let you know that you've actually pressed them, instead of just, okay, I've got 4 millimeters of throw. Boy, do I feel like I'm living in cushy comfort with this slimline keyboard.
Well, it may not work for you. Everybody there that was trying it, I sat around and watched people's reaction. They seemed to like it. And the wireless version is absolutely sexy and beautiful.
Well, that's the thing I was excited about, was the Bluetooth version, because the idea of just having, like, only a power cord, you know, and if we could resurrect Tesla, you know, we'd be down to no wires at all.
With big flailing tendrils of power between the screen and the mouse and the keyboard. your hair going in all directions every time you load up the web.
I hate the idea, though, of having to put batteries in my keyboard. We have a Bluetooth keyboard, and having to load it with batteries every few weeks just bugs the heck out of me.
Yeah, but then again, it helps to underscore the illusion that you're getting a lot. Oh my God, I've burned through another set of batteries. I'm working so hard in this office. Honey, look, I got more batteries because I'm just wearing out these keyboards. God, I'm working hard.
More power.
One of the other things I think is interesting, though, is when we really do look that it's a glorified laptop that's standing up there, is that most of the things that the average person needs to do, the current computers in their base state, the current laptops, can do far more than what any of them need, you know, the average person who would buy an iMac. And looking at the stats here, I mean, it's powerful enough to do production on.
It's a very powerful machine. I have a couple of concerns. One, this has got to be the hottest machine they've ever made. I guess the move towards a metal case helps a little bit with that. The other concern, and somebody's raised this point, a couple of people have raised this point, is that when you're buying an iMac, you're buying a computer that's going to, a monitor that's going to obsolete at the same time the computer does. And that's really not very smart. Monitors usually last longer than computers do. The technology doesn't change as fast. It's kind of not very economical to bundle your monitor with your computer.
Yeah, but it sure is cool looking.
It looks great. Yeah, I bought one.
I got to say, this is the first iMac of this design that I've actually warmed to. I thought that the previous models, they all look like they were designed in like Mac Draw 1.0. I mean, anybody could have designed this. This is the first one where that design really looks hot, really looks cool.
Well, the other thing Apple is on the front, Scott, is that shiny or is it black? I can't tell.
I can't remember. I can tell you that the shininess is the screen. That's the one thing I was a little concerned about when I ordered it. You don't have a choice. You have to take the shiny screen. They said their test and the feedback they got from their MacBook sales led them to believe that's the way people want to go. And I did notice that as we were looking around in the demo room, you know, they had some fluorescent lights. There was quite a bit of reflection. So the first thing I thought is when I get this thing, I'm going to have to maybe look for a monitor hood to put around it. But it was a beautiful screen, the 24-inch that I was working on.
I think that's going to make it look...
What's that?
I like the black bezel around it, though. I think that's going to make it... The screen look good.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I have glossy on both my MacBook and my MacBook Pro, and it you know, you just turn it and it works fine. I don't know how it'll work on a desktop. I guess you'll have to keep away from Windows, but...
Yeah, when Scott, you can you hang this one?
You could, according to one of the guys I talked to, but I'm not going to.
Ooh, that sounds neat. What about the heat issue, guys? I mean,
it wasn't hot.
I ordered the 2.8 gigahertz. You know, you're going to have a 7200 RPM drive in there. You're going to have a lot of RAM. Is this going to be? I mean, are they going to have massive fans? Did you listen for fans, Scott?
It was really impossible. There were so many people in the room. That was one of the things I was concerned about. You know, being a guy that records audio. Although, you know, most of my iMacs that I own are pretty quiet with the exception of when you put a CD in them. I did feel it to see if it was hot because that was something I wondered about, and it wasn't hot at all. I mean, the Apple TV is 10 times hotter.
Yeah, that thing is a muffin warm.
Hot plate, yeah.
So it didn't give off any noticeable heat. And of course, I didn't check to see what configuration was there, and we only had a few minutes, and you know, there was a lot of people, and then everything was distracted when His Highness walked in the room. And
he came in.
He came in and was right there with us. And so that kind of like got everybody away from the computers, which is another thing I thought was odd that he came into the room. Now, quickly, the PR handlers tried to make sure that he didn't actually talk to you, but he was there.
This is a new transparency. They answer questions. Steve Jobs actually mingles with the plebs. I'm kind of stunned here.
It was bizarre. It was like, you know, it was like a some kind of alternate universe. They were very nice and very accommodating. And of course, they did it like they do everything. They did a good job of it. They gave you plenty of access. You got to try all the apps that he showed. They were all installed. And you got to play with the computers, and you know, there was I think a very favorable reaction. The only negative comments I heard were in the room were from people saying they weren't sure that the glossy screen was going to work for them. A couple people said they didn't like the keyboard until they touched it, and then all of a sudden they stopped complaining, and that was about it.
I think that
before we get to software, should we talk about the mini refresh too? Because they've kind of kept that alive too.
Well, that was just because of somebody asking the question. Otherwise, he hadn't mentioned it, and he goes, "Oh yeah, by the way, we got a new mini."
So basically, the code name. I think the code name for this refresh was the Shivo. Too soon? Oh, too soon? Come on.
Too soon.
Andy Anatko said that, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll take full credit for that. I'm very happy with that.
A series of tubes.
Not that kind of tubes.
Yeah.
We'll fix this in post, right?
No, it's going just like this. And the other thing was, is when somebody did try to ask him about the Apple TV... Oh boy, howdy! Was that transparency all gone? It was just
really?
Not talking about that today.
You think they're not selling well?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, he wasn't going to talk about it. He kept saying, "Well, we've called this press conference to talk about the iMac, but I'll tell you this and this and this." But when we got to the Apple TV, he didn't use that line. He's like, "We're not talking about that."
Well, to be fair, he didn't answer any iPhone questions either, did he?
He didn't really get any.
Interesting. Yeah. I think this was a Mac. Let's face it, this was a Mac press conference. And frankly, I'm glad. I was feeling a little bit de-Macified after they took the word computer out and they start focusing on the iPod and the iPhone. I'm glad to see new Macs. I think these are very good machines. I think they'll sell very well. What about this issue that's being raised that Apple needs to create some sort of mid-range Mac, something between the iMac and the Mac Pro that business might buy instead of a beige box Dell? Do you think there's something missing from the product line?
Well, why would business buy something that, I mean, I don't understand why a business company would buy anything other than an iMac, other than they don't like the look of it.
Because they don't want it, because it's not economical. They don't want to obsolete the monitor when they obsolete the CPU. That's not how business works. The monitor is going to last 10 years. The CPU is going to last 2 to 5. It doesn't make sense for them. And I think there's been a number of people talking about this. I think that's very credible. They're not making a machine that business can buy. And I can't remember where I read this. Bloggers writing about it pointed out that, look, at all these conferences, you see all these guys with Mac laptops, but when they go home to their office, they go back to a Dell because Apple has not made a desktop that is priced right for business, that is set up right.
What does a business need more than like a mini then? I mean, the thing is that it's not...
they need bigger screens than it.
Okay, but that's actually a very, very good point, because there's something else I'm considering that... IT also likes to be able to build their own machines and upgrade their own machines. There might actually be a case made for having like a pizza box, like a Mac LC style one, where the entire top pops up, uses standard 3.5-inch drives that are really easy to swap out, so that when the vice president of dumb idiocy does something silly to his machine, he can simply swap out components and get them back up and running in 10 minutes' time.
I remember where I read this now. It's Don McCaskill's blog. He's the president and CEO of Smug Mug. And I think Don made actually really pretty good cogent comments on this. And he, you know, he's a Mac fan, but he says, you know, there's still a missing Mac here.
Yeah, I guess maybe beefing up something more like the Mini, but I just feel like I think
he says that the Mini's not going to work because it doesn't support the big displays. He says, I love the little guys, but our employees, especially those writing code or doing lots of Photoshop work, are more productive with dual displays. And the Mac Mini can't drive too. And that's so it's close, but it's not there. He says, we need a Mac, something like a $500 to $1,000 cheaper than a Mac Pro, powerful enough for most employees, flexible enough for most jobs.
It's called a G5.
Well, he says, yeah, he says, we take a power PC. That's got to be Intel.
I vote no.
Give me his number because I got one to sell him.
I vote no because I think for the kind of people, people are not going to buy this on. This is a machine that you should not be selling on price, in my opinion. It also just reminds me a little bit of the mid-90s. I hate to be the guy who has to bring up the mid-90s every week.
Don't be talking about that kimono again, Merlin.
That was the best time of my life, Merlin. You just keep talking about it.
I really felt special then. The inability to print everywhere I went. But the that idea of potentially cannibalizing your own business by having this crazy assortment of computers. I think right now, I think they're in a pretty good spot. I mean, yeah, it seems to me they're hitting them where they ain't in some ways. But what do I know? I don't know anything about business. I'm just saying that I would not try and compete on a commodity basis. That just seems
And I have to say, when you look at what they've done, and I don't want to start moving us over to iWork, because once we start, we're not going to stop. But when you look at what they're doing there, they're clearly not aiming at a business marketplace. Yes. They're aiming at a home.
You know what? I think it would be great if they actually made the Mac Mini leapfrog over the iMac. Instead of making it the $499 computer that doesn't know where it belongs, make it into the $1,100 easily expandable iMac where you can swap out your own monitor. Make it into that little shoebox computer or that pizza box.
Well, maybe that's what you do. Maybe there's a mid-range, Mac
get rid of the Mac Mini, or just make it. My Greek characters are kind of lost on me. What's between Mini and Maxi? Desi, Centi, Milli, Micro, Femto, Atto,
whatever. Hemi, Demi, Demi, Semi, Mac.
Hemi, Demi, Semi.
His office got a Hemi. There you go.
It's just for music making.
Well, one thing that was interesting to me was that they cut out the 17. And the base price stayed the same for a beefed up 20-inch iMac. And, just last week, in order to facilitate the release of these new iMacs, I went online and priced an old one, thinking that might add some fuel to the fire to get these released. And I priced the top-of-the-line old one at a couple hundred dollars more than the one I just paid for, with not nearly as many cool features.
It's really a great value, I think. I mean, we were waiting to see if they were going to announce it because I needed to buy three of them for the office.
Are you going to buy them?
I'm going to buy three for the office and one for my son and call it a day.
Scott's ordered one. I've ordered one. I ordered the top of the line, 24-inch with the extreme CPU because I'm nuts. You're going to buy three. Andy, did you order one? Or are you going to wait for a reunion from Apple?
Apple's sending me one tomorrow morning.
Merlin, you can buy one?
I'm waiting for someone to give me one 2 weeks from now.
back to the docks.
Can I open that kimono again? I don't know.
I have to find a shorter skirt to wear this time.
Leo, my I have opened my kimono so much, I think I'm wearing the hinges down. Is there a breeze
Memoirs
in here?
Memoirs of a Geisha 2 starring Merlin Mann. Now the chairman brings consumer electronics.
Will work for hardware.
You can pick one up at the Apple store if you want the base configuration, but if you order the one Leo and I did, you got to wait 5 to 7 days is what they're telling us, Leo.
You know, I bought that Mac Pro a while back, and I'm super
happy.
I said
August 14th, so I should be getting mine pretty soon.
Yeah. Well,
I'm excited. I'm really excited. I didn't beef up the RAM. I figure I can always do that with third-party RAM if I want to. Didn't beef up the hard drive because I figure I'll use an external. I'll probably use the Grobo. I'll use an external hard drive. But I do like. I don't know. Is it crazy to buy the Extreme? All you get is a few more gigahertz. And you can overclock it. I don't know how I would overclock a Mac, but you can overclock it.
I went for the full Monty. I got the terabyte of hard disk space. I got the 4 gigs. I got everything.
How many gigs of RAM did you get, Scott?
They only let you get 4.
That's it? Instead, you just be able to buy 4 computers and duct tape them together so you can have 16?
There you go.
With only 4 gigs of RAM, you can only heat up one room in the house. Come on.
And I thought that was cool that you could get 4 gigs in an iMac. Yeah. I mean, that's really all you mostly need.
You need it for Windows if you're going to run Parallels. I know you don't, but you do need that for Windows.
Mm-hmm. Well, you need it if you're going to run, iMovie and GarageBand are both very memory hungry. And if you're going to, you can now do some pretty serious work in both. And, it's definitely good to have that extra RAM.
Yeah, this would be a great GarageBand machine. This would be a great iMovie machine.
I think a lot of times the iLife stuff is partly an upgrade strategy because you put that stuff onto the older machines,
yeah.
And they've added so much graphics and so many effects and everything else that you feel like, oh, I got to buy a new Mac.
Should we move on to software? Are we done with hardware? Anything else to say about the new hardware?
Just a 30-second rat hole. What do you know about that RAID deal? The RAID is it a RAID card?
Now for $1,000, you can get a RAID 5 card for your Mac Pro. There have been third-party cards for a while. I don't think they're that expensive either, so I'm not sure that's such a great deal. I mean, I use a RAID 5 a NAS. I don't put it inside the box. Well, you'd probably want it. Wouldn't you want an extra a RAID? What do they call
it? Yeah, to me, that's part of the value of it is that having it externally.
Yeah. Okay, we just have Xservs, so we have two of those.
Xserv, yeah.
Yeah, which, by the way, interesting note for the more pro listeners. With the Xservs, one of the things we discovered is that if you make a RAID, we had this because one of our controllers was threatening to fail. And, there's two controllers on the RAID, and there's like 14 drives. And if you do a 5.0 RAID across the entire, across all 14, and one of the controllers fails, you lose, everything. So it's better to do two control, each have them control their own little world so that each one has 7 drives. And then do 5 across those. And I just thought I'd say that because it really was a pain in the neck to change it later. And
I know many of our listeners have 14 hard drives that they'd like to slave together.
I have 28 that I'd like to slave all together.
Very common problem, I think.
Yeah. I just wish I had 28 more.
Can we talk about skimming?
Skimming?
What is skimming? What's that?
Skimming is the new star of all these iLife apps. Your ability to sort of scrub in real time your clips, whether they're photos, whether they're videos, and see what they are. That was the real thrill moment of the press conference.
Interesting. So this is better than the media browser. How would it work?
Okay, so we can talk about it. Let's talk about it first in the context of iPhoto. In iPhoto, you now have the ability to group your images in what they call events. And so instead of opening up a 5,000 photograph library and going, now where the heck is that picture of Merlin in his kimono?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Nice.
Now you just say, okay, it automatically says any photo you shot on a given day, it will put into an event. So it'll immediately say, well, you shot 200 photos on Thursday. Chances are they're all related. We'll put those in one event. And you shot 12 photos last Wednesday, and chances are they're all related. We'll put those in one event. Now, you can split and add to these as you like, but it does sort of a smart collection for you. And what's really cool is then it puts a little icon in your iPhoto library. And now this is where skimming comes in. You touch that icon, and boom, you can see a small thumbnail of all those pictures.
Oh, that's kind of neat. So if you're working on your movies, your movie from your trip to France, you've got all the media in a sensible way organized.
Well, if you do it with iMovie, you would take things into iMovie and you have a static clip sitting there, and then you drag the clip onto the timeline and you hit play and you see what it looks like. Now you've got all these clips sitting there, and as you run your mouse cursor over them, they start playing.
Oh, wow.
And what's really cool is if you click and hold, you can actually set an edit point, hit E, and the thing's up on your timeline.
Boy, you really do need a fast machine for that. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Merlin, when you said this is all about Alex is forcing people to upgrade.
Yeah.
That's going to take a lot of process.
I'll tell you, the first time you see it, it's very tough not to be wowed by it. And in the room were several Final Cut Pro users who were like, crap, I might try this.
I want that to happen on Final Cut Pro.
What I caught of the iMovie demo stuff looked pretty neat.
It was fascinating.
I read somewhere that you can upload from iMovie directly to YouTube. Is that the case?
Yeah.
And to your iPhone now.
Yeah, I thought it was fast. Now, the interesting thing is that means it's going to most likely compress to H.264 and upload an H.264 to YouTube. Which I thought
like that.
Well, I think it's interesting the fact that that they're, you know, because we're seeing, you know, YouTube is quietly translating everything into H.264. They're not saying that they're gonna change to it, but they are moving that over. And I think the report was that by the fall they were going to have everything in H.264, which is a more efficient format than.
But also, this is part of the Apple Google synergy. We're seeing more and more of this.
I'm telling you, this is going to be my new hobby horse, Leo. That is. And especially now with this this phone, I'm telling you, there is we should talk about this on another show, but I think there's some huge opportunity here in terms of that. I mean,
well, just think, if you're a kid and you're shooting videos, now you produce it on iMovie, you press one button, it's on YouTube. I mean, this is a publishing.
How about you're sitting in an airport and you're editing Google Documents on your phone, which you can do.
Right.
That's mind-blowing. I can't believe it actually works.
They were specifically asked during the press conference if this was a sign that Google and Apple be working more closely together about the YouTube thing, and Steve very bluntly said, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good partnership. I can't think of two companies I'd rather see work together more than Apple and Google. Those are two
more dangerous to work together as well. I mean, that's got to
dangerous for Microsoft, dangerous for everybody but Google and Apple, you bet.
Yeah, they know.
These are the smartest people in the valley right now.
Yeah,
and think about that. I mean, you know, we were talking a little bit ago. You know, should we have the mid-range computer? Blah blah. And I was kind of thinking, well, you know, Apple's been kind of grooming itself to become this whole lifestyle brand for a long time, and I think they don't really necessarily want. I mean, obviously they want a larger pie in the sense of the iPhone and things like that. But what they really want is to bring people into the fold. Of getting the whole idea of why Apple is different. So really, you've got people who think Apple is different and people who don't. And it seems to me that the kind of people who think Apple is different will not buy on price. They will buy on brand and experience. And that ability to kind of hook that up with that Google kind of on the go, you know, this is not Microsoft, this is going to follow you wherever you go. Anyway, other show. But I think there's a fascinating opportunity between the two companies right there.
Well, it was pretty interesting to me. Go ahead.
I'd say I'd like to see more of that in the iPhone, too.
Yeah.
And boy, then you've got an amazing combination.
Speaking of iPhone, I covered the entire news conference from my iPhone. I was Jaikuing.
I was watching you on Jaiku.
And most people were emailing me back going, dude, you're ahead of Engadget. You're beating everybody to the punch.
Armed with
that. That worked really well. A microblog platform of Jaiku with the iPhone. I thought that worked very well.
I got a picture of Steve up there. I mean, I did it. I'm sitting there, all these guys carrying their big, heavy laptops and cameras, and I'm just there with my little iPhone.
Okay. When real journalists start playing the first post game, I weep for our republic.
Well, see, I'm not a real
Bubba
journalist.
Bubba Booey, Bubba Booey, Bubba Booey.
I'm not a real journalist. So
he's wearing a black turtle.
Now, one of the things I thought was interesting is they really, according to Apple, they completely rewrote iMovie from the ground up.
It is
they threw it away.
Completely new.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's something that
they needed.
It needs to happen with more applications more often.
I've got the impression that much of the iLife programs were really just a bunch of Apple scripts cobbled together with some spit and glue. So I think this is probably about time to start refreshing them all.
And we see some Aperture-like interface stuff going on now. And also, in, for instance, iPhoto, has really been beefed up. I mean, you've got all that functionality of the skimming going on and the events that I talked about, but you also now have actual photo editing controls like you find in Aperture or even Photoshop. For instance, you can now adjust contrast and brightness and really get in and work on the photo and do things to it that you couldn't do before with a real high level of detail.
You mean like on a per section basis as opposed to a total image basis?
Well, it's still not, you know, it's still not like a Photoshop layers kind of thing, but okay. You have far more image adjustment capability now in iPhoto than you used to. And that's a good sign to me. And they've adopted some Aperture-like features across the board. All these, the skimming thing and the way they do these events is sort of like stacks and Aperture. It's automatic. This is a good sign.
Okay, let's just. I'm looking at I've got the screenshot in front of me of the adjustment layer, and I don't see anything that's different from the old iPhoto.
Well,
exposure, contrast, highlights, shadow. Okay, shadows and highlights.
Shadows and highlights are the main thing that impressed me.
Okay.
Because those are really important to most real photographers, and where you have, for instance, an iPhone that has no control whatsoever over that kind of stuff, if you can get that photo into iPhoto and then use the shadow highlight feature, you can solve a lot of problems that you would normally not be able to without it.
Yeah. Plus, you have a mid-level adjustment, the levels control, noise reducer. Okay.
Yeah, the noise reduction.
Oh, and you can copy paste. Okay, that's great. Apparently, you can copy and paste adjustments from one photo to another.
Yeah, that's like awesome. That's taken from the lift and stamp tool in Aperture.
Yeah.
And you can the noise adjustment is another thing I forgot to mention. That is really good. It's well executed. I mean, I've only played with it for a couple of 15 minutes maybe, but what I saw of it is really good. And these are things you used to have to go to Photoshop for. Now you can do them in iPhoto. I think it's going to make people think twice about, you know, upgrading to the Lightroom and some of the higher end products that don't really need it.
Okay, but do you think that will really be a competition to Photoshop Elements? Because I'm always shocked at how well Adobe steals the best feature out of this $2,000 program and sticks it into this $99 consumer app.
Well, Photoshop Elements is a great thing, but you know, you get Photoshop Elements for $99. For $79, you get the entire iLife suite. I don't think there's a comparison.
Okay, but up to this point, iPhoto has really, really sucked, and it's been almost nearly completely useless. Whereas, again, Photoshop Elements has brought you layer control. It's brought you incredible editing features. I saw a demo of something that I can't talk about that, you know, immediately made me think, do that again. I didn't see what I just thought. You did that with 3 seconds? Holy cats.
Well, I think
I've never had iPhoto do anything for me
You're talking about image editing versus collection. I mean, what we're talking about, I think with iPhoto, they're intended for two different things. I think someone would be very happy with having Photoshop Elements and having iPhoto because, you know, Photoshop Elements doesn't manage all of their images either. So I think it's a matter of having the basic corrections. You know, I think Apple would be very careful. I think Apple will be very careful to add lots of real photo editing tools to any application for fear of really causing a nuclear war with Adobe. I mean, that's going to.
Yeah, they'll cause a $50 copy of Photoshop Elements to suddenly appear. Adobe will zoom iPhoto like in about 10 seconds if that ever happens.
Well, I think it's because there were rumors for a long time that Apple was working on an Intel version. There's always been rumors that Apple has something back there that they've been playing with, mostly as a defensive mechanism against the possibility of Photoshop not being on the Mac or something like that. But I think that if they started putting in lots of paint tools, for instance, I think that Adobe would get very sensitive very quickly.
I don't think you'll ever see that until that's going to happen, Alex. I think that the main difference is that, you know, Photoshop is a pixel editor and iPhoto and even Aperture are not. They're more, like you said, they're more geared around their management capabilities. And the fact that, for instance, photos brought into iPhoto are instantly available to you in iMovie, iWeb, all your other applications. That's the power of that suite.
Yeah, but that's I just wish it did more.
You're not, I mean, Apple's saying this is the market we want is the photographer market. We don't. And photographers, I think, more and more are saying, I don't really want a iPhoto. I want Lightroom, or maybe I want Aperture. I want WebMedge photos. I don't need all that power, and maybe this is a sweet spot for them.
Not even professional photographers. More people are getting these big 10 megapixel cameras that cost $300. More people are getting basic SLRs that cost $500 that can shoot RAW. The first time that you show somebody that, no, you don't have to go into Photoshop and do all kinds of layer compositing and do all kinds of fine-tuned masking and editing. You can just slosh a few sliders around in either Lightroom or Aperture, and boom, suddenly your party shot, there's actually a background instead of a big inky void in the back. Now suddenly the skin tones come completely alive. All these things you can do just by moving sliders in Aperture to now, that's something that iPhoto has been absolutely deaf, dumb, and blind to. And that's the reason why, right at this point, the only thing I use iPhoto for is to put pictures onto my iPhone, period. I'm glad to see that Apple has finally decided to, you know, to take the dog out to the farm to live out its life in the pasture and just driven away and replace it with something better and less improbable. And that's why I'm really going to be aggressively checking out iPhoto, because I want it to succeed. Up to this point, though, it's just been a big crushing disappointment.
Well, the new skimming feature is clearly the sexy thing that they added to it. That's what they're depending on. They also have new photo print sizes, new book options, larger calendars.
Yeah, I think a lot of these things are not that compelling. I think the same thing with the film loops or whatever they call it, the photo sharing capability, just it weren't that compelling. I think ultimately people want to be able to import their photos, fix their photos, and share and you know, maybe share their photos. And I agree with Andy. I think a lot of those people are looking, I don't know if they're looking at Elements. I think mostly they're looking at Lightroom and maybe Aperture and finding it.
They're going to have to spend $300 to do that.
That's a good place. Well, that's right. And I think that's a good place for Apple to aim. I think that's a good target for iPhoto.
Yeah, I think that you know, the other thing is they're not really, most of the people who are going to be using the new version of iPhoto immediately are either people who are very enthusiastic about it or people who are getting it for free. You know, it just comes with their computer. And the fact that all of the software simply ships with their computer is very compelling when you look at the growth of the computer sales. So I think that so we're not really talking about people paying $79. What they're doing is they're getting the application with it, and then iPhoto is very compelling for a free app that came with your Mac. I mean, you know, when it's bundled into everything else. And then there's a lot of people who aren't interested in Aperture, and there's a lot of people who get confused by it. I get confused by Aperture. If I didn't watch Scott's video on Aperture, I'd be totally.
Oh, I'm totally with you there. There's so many times when I was chatting with Ben Long, saying, "How come it doesn't do this really simple thing with a cropping tool?" And Ben will say, "Andy, it does do this really simple thing with a cropping tool. If you watch the DVD, you'd know that." And I'd say, "I don't want to read a manual. I want to watch a DVD even less than I want to read a manual."
Well, that's what iPhoto's for. You know, it's in many ways.
I suppose my big complaint with iPhoto is just that Apple is not known for being a company to give its consumers solutions that have a really firm glass ceiling, that you will get to a certain point with this app and then boom, it will not let you grow beyond this point. You're going to have to eject and go to something completely different in order to really move forward in your creativity. And iPhoto, boy, you're going to bump your head really quickly. I think most people who, if they have anything more than a snapshot interest in photography, they're just going to outgrow it really quickly. It's great for a free app, and I'm glad that it comes built in. I just wish it were more ambitious.
Well, give it a chance.
I think you guys are coming at it from a very different angle, and I might be misinterpreting what you're saying, but I think you're coming at it the angle of somebody who's seen with a lot of perspective how much you can do with photos versus people who just want to plug in their freaking camera. People who, it must be noted, moving over from Windows, are still amazed in some cases that they can plug in their camera and it just works. And they want to just pull down their photos. And actually, I got to say, hitting the settings thing, I know it's not Photoshop, but, you know, I'll go in and I'll pop the contrast, add a little bit of sharpening. And I don't know. I mean, it's not perfect, but I mean, for somebody who's just a consumer, not even a prosumer, for just somebody who's got a point and shoot, it's way more than enough for most people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I sat down and helped the mother of a friend of mine, and that she had just got an iMac, and she was trying to figure out how to take the photos off of her camera, you know, off of her still camera that she had sitting in there for, you know, a year and a half. You know, so, you know, there is a whole different world other than the one that we're living in of people who just want to, plug the camera in and just have it do its thing, you know?
Yeah. This has a really big risk of sounding like one of those, like, really arrogant statements. But then again, I'm an arrogant person, so I'm going to forge right ahead. I mean,
and an honest one.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason why like we're employed in the jobs that we're employed in is that we have additional perspective. We can sort of help to teach people of what they can accomplish. I mean, I don't want to send this down into a rat hole, but just a few months ago, I met like a 63-year-old man who didn't know how text messaging worked on his phone, and there was this feature he never used, and I just immediately text messaged
him. I think he's hosting
him.
The show tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
and all day long, after that, all day long, he was text messaging his wife because he was like 300 miles away from home. You know, he would never have known about this because to him, this was a very, very deep buried feature. He didn't know this potential existed until someone with additional perspective and additional experience showed him that this thing was possible. And so really, I just wish that the iPhoto is very much a push button, a directory assistance sort of tool when it could be something much more and give people so much more power.
Well, why don't you take a look at the new one, Andy, and give us a report on what you think?
Nope. I've already decided. Okay. I'm writing my column tonight. You guys have changed my mind. I don't need to look at the one. I'm right.
Well, while we're covering iLife, I'll just mention that there was very few updates to the DVD product and the iWeb product. They're mostly just templates. That's really all they added.
Now, I got the impression that they really did some cool stuff with iWeb, like being able to map your web page to your own domain, or at least be able to use your own web post.
Yeah, you can use your own domain name, but there's no real incredible like new functionality within the iWeb suite of services in terms of like the things you can do to code, etc. You can now use your own domain. You got some new templates that he did not spend much time on it at all. It was almost an afterthought.
I really think of iWeb as a spider web that I would strongly encourage people to stay out of. It's very attractive, and man, you can get great looking websites, and it's an utter dead end because you can't take those sites and then grow at all. You're stuck with iWeb for the rest of your life, and I think that's a shame. But it's a very attractive attractive nuisance, as a lawyer would call it. It's not a good way to go.
I think Alex would join me though in hoping that someday Apple will award the Insanity Bleeding Edge Award to Daniel Aaron for what he does.
Oh my gosh!
With iWeb and roughly drafted is done in iWeb.
It's the most insane thing. You look at that. I go to the website every once in a while just to look at the glory of. Oh my gosh! Someone built that in iWeb. You know,
should he ever want to use any other tool, he's screwed. I mean, he's an iWeb customer for life.
There is one new functionality in iWeb that's worth mentioning, and that is that you can now do web snippets and add code snippets from other applications, applets and widgets, and that did kind of strike me as potentially a way around that, Leo, because for instance, they once again showing they're working with Google, they announced that there's Google AdSense built in iWeb. And
I mean, all that's great, but it just keeps you trapped in iWeb. My point is, let's say you design a great, let's say you do roughly drafted, and then someday you'd say, well, I'd sure like to move this to another platform, maybe.
Then you're done.
You're done. You can't. And I really think that's important, that people understand that. It's a dead end. And, just because they're adding functionality to it doesn't make it any less of a dead end.
But it is opening up a little bit. I mean, he didn't spend a lot of time on it because I don't think these are substantive changes. They are important changes to people who really want to stick with iWeb because they don't have any desire to go further. I mean, Craig Severson is another guy who does his site in iWeb and makes it look great. I mean, there are people that get something out of it, but you're right. They are locked into a dead end, and it's not like if you have a WordPress blog.
I've slamming Microsoft for front page for years for a solution that was even less of a lock-in than iWeb. I think it's only fair for me to slam iWeb and make sure people understand it's a bad.
But I do think
iWeb strikes me as being like kind of like the plastic undercoating or something. All right, now that's a terrible way to put it, but it's one of those so that they can say, oh, and you can make a web page, and you can do this, and you can do that. It just strikes me as something that like once you start using a Mac and you start following your nose into all the great software that's out there, you're going to go iWeb.
If iWeb were a kitchen appliance, it would be advertised on UHF television. At 2 a.m.
It's the George Foreman grill.
It's the blender stuff. That demos well but burns out as soon as you try to crush ice.
I use the George Foreman grill fairly often, so I'd like to point that out. But the other thing is, I think iWeb in many ways is good for a guy like me, actually. I do a lot of computer graphics. I hate HTML. I hate the web.
Nobody uses HTML anymore, Alex.
I hate all those applications.
I mean, the thing is, nobody uses Dreamweaver anymore. I mean, that's long gone.
I don't even like WordPress. I mean, the thing is, I'm just like that, you know. And all of these things drive me crazy. Now, it's not that I don't think that they're not useful. I just find somebody who can do it for me. But if I want to throw something up on my own, and I've built lots of little things, but all of them are built in iWeb because they don't have to go anywhere. If I want to do an extensive, right. I'm going to hire some guy, you know, and have it put together, you know. But if I'm just
I used iWeb when I was on the Mac, the Geek Cruise, to quickly whip up a website for all the software that they could download, and I published it on the Mac, and that worked great, and I knew it was never going to go anywhere, right?
I'll tell you who it's for. It's for my Aunt Faye.
Yeah, but even Aunt Faye, I would warn her if by any, and this is the same problem with iPhoto, frankly. This is that ceiling you were talking about. I would warn her, because if she starts getting into it, at least iPhoto, you've got the original photos, and you can always migrate those. You can't with iWeb. I can't believe Daniel does roughly drafts in iWeb. You're saying that he does this in iWeb?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Leo, she's in years. I don't think we're going to have to worry about her, you know, needing to go too far up the line.
But, okay.
But, you know, hey, because we want to go to the bathroom sometime later tonight, let's move on to GarageBand.
Okay.
You know, doesn't it look exactly like MusicWorks, like from 1987, with all the instruments and spotlights arranged in the screen like that?
Yeah, that's kind of a gimmicky thing, but there are some substantive changes to it. If you're, for instance, a podcaster, there's some substantive things. There's multi-take recording now, which is very cool. It's more like pro apps. You can also do envelopes for your effects, so you no longer have to say, I want this EQ on this track, and it's that way for the whole track. You can actually change it within the track so that certain parts are EQ'd and certain parts aren't.
That's nice.
You now have an additional two layers of effects that you can put on. Before, there were only two custom effects layers. Now you can do four. You know, there are some niceties. I wish they would have gone a little bit further and given us an uncompressed out. I know that's Alex's big deal with GarageBand.
They can do uncompressed out.
Well, you can't.
I mean, it can't. Pain in the neck, but it's...
Yeah, you have to go through a bunch of hoops to do it.
The biggest problem with it is, like, if you want to do... For my big complaint about GarageBand, if you're trying to do podcasts, is that if you are trying to take a... If you want to take... If you've already got an MP4 and bring it in, or... If you have to export it later, if you're just adding the chapters into it and that's all you wanted to do, it's this huge, ugly, long export to get out of GarageBand. When you use Cast Maker or whatever, right. And it's, you know, 15 seconds. You know, and that's the thing that made me a little crazy and had me like stop even experimenting with it.
I would like to see if GarageBand. It seems to me it's still a toy. I haven't played with it yet, so it has that toy feel. It's a great music toy. I mean, it's a wonderful toy. I love playing with it,
I think that's a little bit fish in a barrel, because part of what makes the Mac so great, I think, is that, you know, if you want to do like the most amazing high end work, I mean, freaking, what's his name? JJ Abrams. He did the title sequences on his Mac, the title sequences for Lost. He just whipped it up one day on his Mac. He does editing on his Mac. If you want to go to that end of doing stuff, it's really not hard, but they're also going to make it so that it's not intimidating. If you want to go out there and buy a $100 USB box, you can be recording at home the day you buy your Mac.
I
agree with you in the sense that I think it's not an excuse. What I want to say to agree with you is I think it's not an excuse for putting out bad software. But I think, you know, the thing is for GarageBand, for the kind of person who's going to just try it out, yeah, there's always higher end options, but it's a pretty good application.
I have to say, we do a lot of our little internet for our internet shows. A lot of the opens, closes, all of that stuff is being done in GarageBand just because it's we can quickly hook up a MIDI. I can quickly throw it together. It's a lot more advanced than my Emu Emacs was when I was doing it for radio, you know, and soundtrack doesn't take MIDI in, you know, that. So being able to customize something and then throw it together and have a bunch of loops, it works great for that kind of thing, you know, and it's it's a little, it can get a little heavy if you make it heavy, you know.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Leo and everybody else, what's the crappiest application that ships on a Mac right out of the box? You got a Mac, you open it up, you fire it up, boom, it comes up. What's the crappiest application on there?
The one that actually comes with the Mac?
Yeah.
NetInfo.
Do you say iPhoto, Andy?
NetInfo.
Really?
It's not. This is prepare the rat hole card, but it's a very, very technical tool, and it doesn't have to be a really technical tool.
Okay.
Every time I have to write a chapter on that deals with NetInfo Manager, most of it is all about, okay, now you're going to think that you can use it for this, but you can't. Here's what you can do it for, and here's how you would use it that way.
Do you pick GarageBand, Leo?
Leo, are you there?
I'm sorry. Say again. Do I what? GarageBand?
What do you pick as the crappiest app that ships on a Mac?
Oh, not GarageBand. No, far from it. I hope I didn't give that impression. I think GarageBand.
No, just curious though. Like when you fire it up, what do you think is the crappiest app?
Calculator. let's get a little serious. All right, I think iPhoto is in there, and I'd be very interested to see what they've done with iPhoto. iPhoto continually disappoints me as being slow and just kind of. You know, it should be more, and it isn't. I have to look at all my other applications, but iPhotos.
I know the answer to this question hands down.
What?
What is it?
Digital color meter.
No, I use that all the time.
It's 8-bit. It's worthless.
But it works.
Yeah, it's giving you like 256K information on a 1 gigabyte information. It's just crazy.
It's good enough for me. I mean, if I want to match a color in a photo, I use it for web design mostly. I actually use that.
Pick from one of these 256 colors.
No, it's more than that, isn't it? No. It's 8 bits per channel. It's more than that.
I'm exaggerating, but it really, in a 16-bit world, it is obsolete.
Six shades of gray.
No. Look, hey, this is for web design. It's actually a lifesaver. I use it all the time.
Digital color meter sucks. I'm getting a bumper sticker made that says that.
You should get all right, Calvin. I'll give you one. Chess. That is the worst application. It's a port of GNU Chess with crappy graphics. Does anybody use Chess?
Does anyone use Chess
as a productivity tool? No.
Did you even know you had Chess on your computer?
Pawn to King 4.
Does anyone use Stickies?
I do. I love Stickies.
I know someone who swears by Stickies.
I once took notes on a staff meeting on Stickies and lost the whole thing. I'll never use Stickies again.
I have to admit, this is a more touch on Merlin's thing. I have a rule about Stickies, and one is I don't use them in my office and I don't use them on my computer. It's like for efficiency.
It's a sign of lack of trust. It's a sign of lack of trust in your system.
I got one. How about TextEdit? Because it keeps launching every time I want something else to launch. TextEdit says, "I'll take TextEdit."
TextEdit is wonderful. It's a Microsoft Word compatible word processor with a lot of muscularity. It's essentially MacWrite 2.0.
I write all my articles TextEdit.
Can I point out that if I were in Leo's studio, I would have been playing the rat hole music by now.
Okay, so Alex, what's your anti pick? What is your anti pick, Alex?
My anti-pick is Stickies.
Okay.
Stickies.
Can I mention that there's a whole other set of applications we haven't talked about yet before we run out of time?
No, I think it's so important that we talk about iWork because I'll be honest, this spreadsheet is incredible.
I am so excited about it.
Are you guys going to ask me what my app is? iCal. Let's move on.
Okay.
What? iCal's great.
We knew that you were going to say that, Merlin. We didn't need to.
I wish I had two copies of iCal.
So you can stomp on both of them.
One to take a crap on, the other to cover it up with. Let's move on.
We didn't mention there's a whole bunch of stuff in the utilities folder besides NetInfo Manager that's crappy. What about VoiceOver Utility?
Really? But you know, the thing is,
spoken like someone who can see.
It doesn't matter.
I would like to say
digital color meter's in there. You don't need to look at any of the crap.
Okay, I'm gonna go open the terminal window and find a Unix command line utility that I can slag to prove that I'm the most. I'm the most obscure guys.
Console. I hung console yesterday.
What? Console app? You use console app?
I use it all the time. I had console running because I was doing some debugging, and it turned red in Activity Monitor, and I couldn't quit it.
Wow.
It's just like the warning indicators in Star Trek. They just turn red.
There's always an emergency, Captain.
They're not going to tell you what's wrong with it. By the way, I'm going to turn every screen red and tell you you're about to die. Good luck with that.
Does anybody use Grab anymore? I mean, don't we all use Snapsy or Pro or...
I can't
spend $70 for every single one. I
love Migration Assistant. We should have a whole show about Migration Assistant.
Let's move
Migration Assistant was a great thing. All right, let's talk about the new spread. What is it called? Nuts?
Numbers.
What is the new spread? Numbers. That's it.
That's key. Numbers.
And by the way, Steve Jobs let us know that the Apple legal team is going to sue anyone that says the word numbers in any sentence from now on.
It's a pretty generic name, I gotta say.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm very impressed by this. You can download a 30-day, unlike iLife, you can download a 30-day trial of iWork, and you really should. Numbers is not an Excel killer. It's a whole new category.
But it is Excel compatible.
Yeah, reads and writes, both pages and numbers now read and write even Office 2007 documents. And I think that's very important. I don't know how well it does it. I haven't played with that yet.
And it should be mentioned that means it will also work with Google Documents.
Yeah. And by the way, it does not import the macros, though, Leo, just so you know.
Well, that's a good thing, because macros are a source of viruses.
Macros.
It doesn't do the macros. But I'll tell you, some of the things that are cool is that you don't have to be a math whiz to do the formulas. The thing that was the most impressive to me is you could actually reformat parts, not the whole, but parts of your spreadsheet.
I think this is going to be, once again, a market for templates. I hope they make it easy to design templates. I guess you could save any spreadsheet as a template. So.
You can find the templates folder inside the package if you know how to get to the package contents. I already looked at it. So, yeah, the template should be pretty easy.
They're spectacular, and I think this is the real power of it.
But the other thing is what's the number one problem you run into when you're dealing with spreadsheets? It's printing. It's always impossible to print it the way you want to. They solve that because you get to see a real-time preview of what it's going to look like on the page in a way that you can control.
Can we say just, though, ClarisWorks? Can we just say ClarisWorks?
Yeah.
I have to say, I mean, we're kind of now back to where we could have been if they'd kept that thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. I mean, this is so close to that. And I loved ClarisWorks. And this is like... ClarisWorks was 50, 60, maybe 70% of the way there 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see how well this will work on a small screen, like on a MacBook, because I'm really curious to see how well this iTunes interface works on a spreadsheet program.
Okay.
The iTunes interface? Is that what you said? iTunes interface?
Meaning this basic idea of having... a gutter to the left that has all your sources and all your things you can drag into the main editing bar, and then to the right, basically your active spreadsheet. I'm wondering how long it will be before I try to turn off that sheets bar and the styles bar just to get more real estate back if I'm using this not on the nice 20-inch screen but on the little MacBook screen.
I mean, it's not for the spreadsheet geek. Let's face it. I mean, this is something very different. It's hard to say. You know, Pages had a lot of promise, and I found it kind of unwieldy to use as a
writing. I think the new one looks good. I think the new one might be a big improvement,
yes.
Yeah, they separated out the word processing features, which was a great move.
It abstracted all the formatting from the actual text, right?
Yeah, and you can now do trackable changes compatible with Word. You know, they really beefed up the word processor side of Pages. The complaint for a lot of people was they'd open Pages. They really just wanted to do something they could do in something like text, you know, write.
But
now you actually get a real word processor as part of the deal. And then, of course, Keynote got an update that's fantastic.
And look what you're getting for $79. I mean, this is the heart and soul of the Microsoft Office suite for $79.
Yeah, you can't do point-to-point animation in Microsoft products like that.
Say again?
What must the conversations be like with people from the Microsoft BU?
They must be pissed.
The Mac BU.
They've changed it to Microsoft PU.
Wow. Yeah, but really, the Microsoft... I mean, just the pricing of the Microsoft Office shows you it's not aimed at a home user. It's really aimed at a business, and businesses are still going to want Office,
right?
Just for if only for compatibility with the Windows side. This is a home again. This is a home product, and there's nothing comparable really. What did Microsoft Works? I don't think so.
Well, try to do a point-to-point animation in the Microsoft product compared with doing it in Keynote. I mean, you know, this is something that you know only Alex Lindsay's of the world could do not too long ago. Today, I successfully did a point-to-point animation in Keynote, and I got to tell you, I barely knew what a point-to-point animation was.
I don't know what it is. What is a point-to-point animation?
Well, it's like, let's say you want to have an airplane fly across your slide from point A to point B to point C to all the cities that you have an office in type of thing. You can do that in just a matter of seconds.
That's pretty impressive. That really, those kinds of things make a presentation really pop.
I mean, you're talking about someone who's good at it could probably take this stuff. For instance, there's a lot of stuff we got paid to do a lot when I was back doing legal animation. That I got paid to do an After Effects that you could probably do in Keynote now. You know what I mean? Just to throw something together for a really illustrative stuff. I mean, it really is it was really simple, but, I had to build something in PowerPoint a couple weeks ago. And
it's painful.
So painful. I was just
this is where good operating system design and a really intelligent plan really are paying off for Apple, because they've got these core services in the OS. Yep. It's very easy for the applications to incorporate things like that, and it makes it so simple to make beautiful applications across the board. I think this goes back to how good OS X is more than anything else.
Yeah, I find that this is a lot of times, even though there is a glass ceiling on different applications and so on and so forth, and I do get frustrated at times when I feel like I'm getting to the ceiling. I have to admit, a lot of times I just feel like, oh, if I went off into the outside world, it would just be more of a pain in the neck.
Well, I think some ways, some of these applications are just demos. They're demos of Quartz. They're demos of Core Audio. They're showing you, right, yeah, hey, here's something you could do pretty easily. Maybe you should try something even more significant. They come off as, look, we've got such a great operating system. We can do this.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I want to mention that's part of that, Leo, is because of the Core Audio, you can now do synced up voiceover narration with Keynote that effectively turns it into a training tool that would allow you to make training videos, because you can save these as QuickTime movies. So with things that you might have been using Snaps Pro for, you could probably do some of that in Keynote, and you can do the narration. And I did it today as a test, and it worked flawlessly.
Here's the question I have for you on that, and I have to test it, is will it be efficient about that? So is it, when you do a QuickTime movie of it, will it know that it's just one frame over top of a certain amount of audio, or is it rolling out 5 frames a second? I mean, how is it actually handling that data? Do you know?
Apple has a codec just for this, you know.
Yeah, I didn't get into that level of detail, Alex. I was hoping that I could ask you those questions later.
Well, I'll know next
Alex,
week.
don't they have a very smart
well, I mean,
screen display
the truth
codec?
Of the matter is, if you use animation, if you use the animation codec and you set its keyframes to something really high, like 100 or 200 or 300, what it's going to do is it's only going to lay a keyframe when it sees a natural break. So it's only going to put a new frame down every time it sees you change enough pixels in the area. Now, and if you were doing something that moves slowly, you know, so a slow pan or something like that, you get all kinds of tearing. But if you're changing entire slides, it would actually be very, very efficient in that respect.
I'd like to see you play with it, Alex, and give me your feedback. But I think for someone that wanted to do a real basic, like 5-minute training QuickTime movie, had simple concepts, wanted to be able to do voiceover narration with it and have it come out pretty good, given the fact that you do have the accessibility to your media browser, which means your photos, your videos, your audio from GarageBand, whatever. I mean, I put together a pretty amazing presentation in 5 minutes using this thing that just, I was pretty impressed with what I was able to do in 5 minutes.
Just what I'll do is something like Craig Severson could do with this.
Yeah. And that scares me to think what Craig can do with this.
Yeah.
I'll make some stuff for the Pixel Core, and then I'll give you a report next week.
I just have to say, I think iWork has really proven to be a very, a very exciting package. It was, kind of partially there, but now with the addition of Numbers and the additional power and Keynote and Pages.
It used to be 70. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's apple.com/iWork/trial.
Trial.
They don't expose it very well.
So, no, you can't find it on the page.
Yeah. Yes. But it's a 30-day trial. Well worth downloading, just to get a sense of it. I downloaded it immediately, and I was very impressed. I only wish you could do the same with iLife. For instance, I'm gathering now, the reason I can't upload from my iPhone is that I have to create a web gallery in iPhoto 08 before I can.
Yeah,
I
don't you seem have to add, and you have to download version 7.01 from software update.
So I can't do it from my .Mac website. I actually have to have iLife 08.
Yeah, that's got a few people angry. This is confusing. You have to have iLife 08, which includes iPhoto 7.01.
Right, an update to 7.01. Yeah. So, all right. So, as soon as I get my iMac, I guess I'll be able to one button upload my iPhotos. That'll be nice, I guess.
Can I just point out that this is exactly the kind of thing that we used to really hate Microsoft for?
But you don't have the new version. I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm sorry you misunderstood. Of course, the .Mac portion of this is separate from the application running on your desktop. It's fully
That's
integrated.
Okay. Plenty more where that came from.
in balance, I think that these are pretty good announcements from Apple. This sure beats the iPod socks and the hi-fi.
Now, is anybody else a little bit curious about one major piece of software that they did not even give one sentence in passing to? Leopard?
Oh, well, they did say you don't need Leopard for any of these features, and they did say that Leopard will work on the new iMacs. Didn't they say that much?
But, Yeah, but did they say that Leopard will be announced before these iMacs are replaced with something bigger?
And I know what you're talking about. You're talking about. And I've seen this on projects where once a project starts to slip, you want assurances.
Yeah.
You kind of want to go, hey, and by the way, we haven't lost track of that whole Leopard thing. We're on.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and remember.
It'd be so easy if they knew that the October 30th ship date was in the bag. It would be so easy to say, and of course, when Leopard ships on October 30th, this will all be, all these new features will be exposed to blah, blah, blah. It was clearly
It's not in the bag. That's pretty obvious.
Wait a minute. They said October.
Remember, we were saying.
They did not say what year October.
October in metric time. You have to double the date and add 30.
We were speculating back in January the reason we hadn't seen iLife 08 was because it required Leopard. Apparently, we were wrong.
That's absolutely not correct. Good point, Leo.
Why was there no iLife 07? What happened?
Good question. I guess they're going to say that was because
Rhode Island.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, that's probably a pretty big undertaking. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that Apple's doing, and this has been made our job harder, is that. I didn't know it was possible, but they seem to have gotten much more disciplined where they really don't give you anything else to talk about other than what they want you to talk about. You know, when they put the iPhone out, we didn't have news for weeks before, weeks after, you know, that was related to Apple, you know, and so we played around we tried to do the best we could to say something other than iPhone.
Yeah, I don't think we would have started this podcast if we knew that Apple's going to be so damn tight-lipped about everything.
Yeah, so then what happened? Now we have this new news, and we'll have some stuff to talk about for the next couple of weeks, and we can only hope that Apple has something else to talk about or that other people release something that makes it interesting. But the Apple has become like they really don't want to talk about anything outside of, you know, what they came to talk about with you today.
And when they opened it up for questions, Scott, did it seem like they were – I mean, how did they control that portion of the event?
Steve just ignored people who asked him questions he didn't like.
Really?
Were there any questions he didn't answer?
Yeah, when someone said they asked the question about the Apple TV, that's the one he wouldn't answer.
Right. Okay.
They had Apple PR people in the audience with microphones. He would point to who he wanted to talk to. They'd bring the mic over and answer the question, ask the question, and he would answer it. And, you know, it was generally the same kind of stuff. The most direct answer he gave was to the question about the Google relationship.
Yeah. Did it seem like they were handpicking questioners, like they were going for friendly questioners? Although no, I can't no, imagine no, anybody no. friendlier than Mr. Scott Bourne. I own $1 million worth of Apple stock.
You know, as an Apple stockholder, I was hoping he would ask me a question.
Oh, my God. We forgot to disclose.
That's right. We forgot.
No, we don't have to do it at any particular time.
Okay. We can do it.
We can go around at the end and disclose.
Well, we just mentioned
it. I think something about our heirs and assigns own stock, and we might not be able to tell you the truth, so don't listen to us.
No, we just mentioned that some of the participants in Mac Break Weekly may hold shares in the companies we discuss.
I wish to disclose fully that I am a freelance journalist and I can't afford health insurance, let alone stock in any company. So you can trust everything that I say.
Given the length of the podcast, should we talk about a pick at this point?
No, we did our anti picks. I think that's a pretty good start. You know, good on that.
Well, as we wrap up, any final thoughts?
I'm just damned excited. I think they've released a really nice looking piece of hardware, some very significant software updates. This is exactly what we were hoping Apple would do. The Mac is alive and well and thriving, and I think this is all great news. I can't wait till mine comes.
I'm really excited because they seem to have taken two of my least liked iLife and iWork apps, Pages and iPhoto, and sent them to rehab. And hopefully it'll take better than it did with Lindsay Lohan and the rest of the bunch. So I really am interested in playing with that tomorrow and just seeing if these are now finally apps that I can actually enjoy using.
I'm excited to start playing with
coming up with. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's it. That's all I was going to say. Looks great.
I was just going to say, I think it's, you know, this is Merlin's Noda realization of the week, but they just keep coming up with interesting reasons to send you into an Apple store is another thing.
Yep.
I think that's really smart. I mean, they've got people, look at all the free press they got about the whole notion of the Apple store as a result of the iPhone. Yeah. So they've got a lot of people in this idea. Again, I keep coming back to this lifestyle thing. And I think they've got some new additions where people are going to go, oh my gosh, I love Microsoft Excel, but you know, I kind of hate Microsoft Excel and I love my Mac. So why don't I just go pick up this little disc? I think it's exciting.
One more thing I would like to point out is I think that this is the beginning of a transition for Apple into a more of a Detroit mentality. And I think all computer companies are having to face this. Dell is certainly facing this, where the processors are fast enough. The cards are fast enough. Everything's mature. People aren't really motivated to buy a new computer, except that it's the new model year. And this new model makes the old model look kind of old and in the way. And it's not fins this year. You know, it's glossy black. And I think that that's where you're going to start seeing Apple be really move ahead of the pack, because they know better than anybody how to make you want something and how to use design to create new trends. And I think this is a very good example of a Mac that isn't much better. I mean, it's somewhat, but it's not much better than the old one. But it looks so much better. You've got it. The old one's just starting to look funky now.
Well, I think also, I think that, that one thing that's important is that Apple has taken a leadership role in the area of multimedia and this kind of heavy stuff that still requires faster, better computers. When you look at the average person using Excel and doing their email and doing all that other stuff, they're fine for the next 10 years. You know, there's nothing they need from these new applications. And when Apple keeps on pushing the envelope and creating something so cool that you want to play with it, well, you're going to have to buy a new computer to keep up. And that's something that and now they're the known leaders. I mean, no one thinks
this is why you're seeing that 30% growth quarter after quarter. And you're not seeing it in the beige box set, because there's no compelling reason to upgrade a Dell at this point.
Yeah.
Well, I promise not to replace this iMac for 12 months.
I'm not making any promises.
You can buy another iMac to put next to it, but you can't replace it.
That's correct.
I don't replace any of my. We finally put to pasture like two original iMacs that were being used as key servers. We never replace anything. They just kind of move down the food chain, you know.
Well, I think it's been a great discussion. Alex, people who want to get in touch with what you're doing can find you where?
Pixelcore.com or pixelcore.tv.
Mr. Anatko, where would you like for folks to find you?
My home is the colossal waste of bandwidth, CWOB.com, or you can see me at suntimes.com, home of the mighty great metropolitan newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times.
And Mr. Mann, you have so many projects. Which would you like to mention?
Well, I hang out at the park near Hayden Stanyan, and I'm earning my electronics one piece at a time. And if you
no rough trade, though, right?
Well, I can go a little rough.
Okay. The, 10 cents a dance, looking for lovers.
Listen, I could really use a Bluetooth headpiece.
You look nothing like your MySpace photo.
A moment of your time, Mr. Yakimoto. And you can see more at 43folders.com. Thank you very much. Good job, Scott. Good job chairing the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. LaPorte.
Very much.
Mr. LaPorte, really I appreciate the opportunity to sit in your shoes for a minute, although they're a little tight. Where would you like
to... supposed to be sitting in them. You're supposed to be wearing them on your feet.
That's what I was doing.
You know where to find me, and you can find Scott Bourne at applephoneshow.com. And I understand you did a great show this afternoon.
Yes, we did. Thank you, sir.
I can't wait.
It's been fun. It's been cool. And I guess we'll have to say that another Mac Break Weekly has been broken.